usually worked out by the parents of the bride and groom, often when the bride and groom were just children. Once they were both of marrying age, the betrothal occurred. The betrothal could last for weeks, months, or even a year. It was a time of preparation for the groom, a time for him to establish himself and prepare a home for his future bride, often by building a room onto the house of his parents. At the betrothal, the groom would prepare a marriage contract and present it to the bride and her father. To see if the proposal was accepted, the young man would pour a cup of wine for his intended. If she drank from the cup, the proposal was accepted. If she did not drink, the covenant was void. Finally, there was the wedding feast. It all started when the groom, accompanied by his attendants, came to the home of the bride and her family. The time of the groom's arrival was uncertain, so the bride and her maids would prepare and then wait, sometimes for hours, especially if the bridegroom came from any distance. There was just no telling when he would arrive. But since he was the guest of honor, no matter when he arrived, he was warmly and honorably welcomed. To announce his coming, the groom and his attendants would give a shout or blow a shofar as they neared the bride's house to announce that they were on their way. Once the groom and his party met up with the bridesmaids, they would parade through the streets announcing that the time of the wedding feast had come and the celebration for the community was about to begin. This often occurred in the late evening, and so we can see the need for lamps or torches. Not only would the lamps provide the light needed to walk the darkened paths and streets, but the lamps helped to identify the wedding party. Today, we hear those who took their identity as bride's attendants very seriously. They were prudent and prepared for the groom's coming no matter when it happened. They brought what was needed to sustain their waiting. Those maids who were foolish did not see themselves in light of their role as bride's attendants, and they had not brought a supply of oil to keep their lamps lit. And so they missed the celebration while trying to prepare too little, too late. This parable shows us that our identity is important and that we must do what it takes to prepare what is needed to fulfill our role as Christians. We don't often think about preparing for or practicing for our role as Christians, as followers of Christ. We don't think of sustaining the flame of our lamp of faith. But we do seem to expect it in other areas of our life. If I tell you that I'm going to run a marathon, after you finish laughing, you'll probably expect that I am making changes to my life that would allow me to do this. I have probably been running at intentional distances and schedules for months. I will have purchased the correct shoes and the right clothing to allow me to accomplish this race. I also have probably changed my diet in the months and weeks leading up to the run and procured protein bars and liquids to sustain me on the actual marathon itself. And as I train for this marathon, I may find that I seek out a community of others who also like to run. I may subscribe to a runner's magazine or join an online community and seek out runners and experts who might give me advice on how to improve my performance and readiness for a marathon. When I introduce myself to others, I might even identify myself by saying, "I'm a runner." In short, my being ready for the marathon is no accident. I don't wake up and find that I've accidentally been running a training schedule for a marathon, or find that surprisingly I've been issued a number and have arrived ready to run the many miles ahead. The things that are important to us, the things that form us, require training, practice, and attention to detail. Our identity and vocation as Christians requires nothing less. as an intentional way of living, of following Christ, then we are ready to prepare what is needed to keep our lamp alight. One of the ways that we can feed this flame is through faith practices. Now, I don't mean practice as in practice makes perfect, although just showing up as the foolish virgins did is at least the first step. I mean immersing ourselves in the practices of faith by being a viable part of the community of the faithful. Brian McLaren, one of my favorite Christian authors, says that we must learn Christ as if Christ were a language or a skill or an art we must practice and immerse our lives in. He says that pilgrimage, fasting, the sacred meal we call communion, stewardship, Sabbath, and the liturgical year are all ancient practices that have formed us through centuries of waiting for Christ to come again. And what's more significant, perhaps, is what these practices counter. Pilgrimage, for example, leads us to embrace the unfamiliar and reject nationalism and ethnocentrism and racism. Fasting builds self-control and weakens gluttony, lust, and greed. The Eucharist meal that's at the center of our worship together calls us to reconciliation with God and neighbor, banishing self-centeredness and bitterness. Common prayer, so essential to our church, counters drudgery, illuming the ordinary of our life with the colors of the sacred. Giving, or stewardship, bridges the gap between the rich and the poor and begins to heal the expanse that yawns between the two. Honoring the Sabbath frees the worker from the external tyranny of exploitation and the internal tyranny of workaholism. And the liturgical year defies amnesia and apathy with shared memory and anticipation of what's to come. Spiritual practices, then, are about training ourselves to become the kind of people who experience life with a capital L and God with a capital G. Paying attention and being prepared to walk each day as a disciple of Christ requires a decision. Not an altar call kind of decision, but a decision that Christ crucified and risen, is how we will define ourselves and form our lives. It means knowing that we have a role to play in God's kingdom and being willing to prepare our lives and ourselves to fulfill that role. Spiritual practices can help us to fill the gap between the person we want to be and the person that we are actually becoming based on our life and our choices. It is by God's grace alone that we have been invited to the wedding feast. God has prepared the banquet, and the shofar has sounded.